Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A group of conservative Republican state lawmakers want to vote to declare pornography a public health crisis in Ohio. The measure doesn't have the force of law, but the message it sends could inspire further action. Proponents claim pornography incites violence against women, sexual activity among youth, and more. Opponents say that the public health crisis label goes too far, that research hasn't turned up evidence of a link between pornography and public health. State Representative Jenna Powell is a Republican representing Miami County and parts of Dark County. She introduced the resolution declaring pornography a public health crisis, and she joins us. Welcome.
Awesome. Ann, thanks so much for having me.
How do you define a public health crisis?
Yeah, so right now what we're looking at in this, it's specifically a resolution. This resolution raises awareness on the negative impacts of pornography on society and saying, hey, in relation to sex trafficking, abuse of women and minors, this is a huge problem, not only through Ohio, but throughout the United States. So we're looking at it and saying, hey, this is a health crisis, not only for children, but for women and men as well.
How do you define a public health crisis? What's the tipping point, I guess?
Yeah, so the tipping point is when we start looking through data, there's some different human trafficking task force that have been released, and they've shown the statistics and the data of sexual aggression toward women and specifically to minors as well. So what we're looking at is saying, you know, enough is enough. In the Me Too movement and era that we're in, we're tired of the exploitation on women and children throughout society, and something has to change. So declaring it a public health crisis starts gathering data and starts making changes kind of in the state of Ohio.
If this resolution were enacted, someone would start collecting data?
Yeah, so a resolution doesn't necessarily change law, but in the resolution, what we're specifically looking for is at the end of it, we're saying, hey, this is where community-oriented, whether it's churches, businesses, families, nonprofits, need to start really looking into the data on a local level and seeing the exact harm in Ohio and around the United States.
The data and the statistics on sexual violence is one thing, but the connection to a public health crisis is another. What's the evidence that it's at some kind of a crisis level and that it's linked to pornography?
Yeah, so all throughout culture and society right now, you know, you can look to different things and you see it's all in relation. There's sex trafficking, pornography, abuse of women and minors. And there's been different studies already shown. The Minnesota Human Task Force has already shown different studies exposing the relation to pornography and then the increased risk for committing sexual offenses. So we've already seen that in other states as well that have declared it a public health crisis. So this is a step in the right direction for Ohio to say enough is enough. Let's protect our women and children in our state.
Did you consult public health officials?
You know, we've talked to many different people about this already, and we do also have 19 state reps as well standing behind this and looking to move it forward. So that's kind of how the legislative process works. You present a bill and then it moves through the process, mm-hmm. And you continue hearing both sides.
Uh-huh. But you didn't consult public health officials. That's what I'm.
Have we specifically talked to them about this bill? We have talked to multiple different people and organizations about this already.
But not public health officials.
Not in specific, but some different organizations we have, yeah.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with State Representative Jenna Powell. She's a Republican. She represents Miami County and parts of Dark County, and she introduced a resolution declaring pornography a public health crisis in Ohio. If you have a question or comment for her, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'm wondering, you told the Dayton Daily News that we're saying enough is enough, and you just said it here on the air that you're tired of the exploitation of women and children in Ohio. What was that tipping point for you? What inspired this particular resolution at this time?
Yeah, so as a lawmaker, I did not become a state rep to say, hey, we're done with pornography, we're done with any of those things. But what I did look at is say, how can we help culture and how can we help families specifically in our community and in our state? And over again, you know, the Me Too movement and the sexual exploitation kept coming up of, you know, it's harming our children, it's harming families. So this is one way that we have seen a correlation of, you know, pornography epidemic and with the, you know, kind of the sexual revolution that's happening with sex trafficking and the abuse of women and minors. So this is one way that we can start looking into data, very specific, and we can say, all right, what can we do to help children and families in our community and in our state?
So you just came up with the idea out of thin air or what?
No, so there's some different organizations as well that have, you know, done some research and said, hey, let's start looking into this. And as well, there has been other lawmakers as well who've kind of brought this issue up to the attention and said, hey, let's work on this together.
Yeah, you mentioned other states have done that. So this is kind of following a template that other states have followed?
Yeah, so there's been other states. Yeah. That is correct. There's been other states that have declared it a public health crisis, and they start looking into the information and data. And we live in an era where, you know, children between the ages of 7 to 11 years old are starting to look at pornography, and it's placed in front of them. And, you know, I think most people, I would hope all people would say that is not okay and something has to change.
Well, right. There's a difference between saying that's not okay and calling it a public health crisis, though. Isn't there?
Yeah. So I see what you're saying. So a lot of people have said, you know, are you trying to outlaw pornography? You know, we live in a free society where people can choose to do, you know, as they want. They can choose to hurt themselves. But when their choices start hurting other people, such as women and children, that's when we have to start looking at the data and seeing what we can do to make a difference on a state level.
You've mentioned the Me Too movement a couple times. Are you a supporter of the Me Too movement then?
I think there's been some different things that have arisen from the Me Too movement that have been good. You know, just like anything, there's good and there's bad in a movement that have happened. But, you know, as a woman, seeing other women in culture, there's a lot of sexual abuse and misconduct that is happening. So we want to do everything we can to help women and children in society. And I think from the Me Too movement, we have seen some good things in that.
You said that pornography, I think you told the Dayton Daily News, I might be incorrect about who you told, but the pornography addiction is causing hardships for families. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah.
What's your evidence for that?
Yeah. So I was looking over an analysis of the 50 best-selling adult videos and kind of the data that they've revealed. And some of the things that we've seen is, on average, teens had 11.52 acts of verbal or physical aggression, almost always geared toward women. 72% of acts of aggressions were perpetrated by men. You know, these are things that we're seeing and we're going, this can't be helpful to families. When men or women are viewing pornography that is physically aggressive, that's verbally aggressive, these things do not help families thrive in the state of Ohio. And this is where we have to say, you know, enough is enough. We need to start looking into this data a lot more and saying, is it really healthy for a child between the ages of 7 and 11 to have pornography put in front of their face? How does that strengthen a family in our state?
Well, I don't think I get what you're saying. No, you don't want a seven-year-old to be looking at pornography, but what's the evidence that that many kids are being exposed at a level that brings it to the level of a public health crisis?
Yeah, so obviously you're trying to say, how do we know we should make this a public health crisis or not?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I want to know.
Yeah, that's a great question. There is so much information out there that says this is very harmful to children. I've talked to so many different people, even in our community alone, that are in different, trying to get away from the addiction of pornography and saying this is a huge problem throughout our state and it's ravaging families and communities. And so then we have to look at that and say, hey, can we make this a public health crisis in the state? And I think that we do have enough evidence to say, let's make it a public health crisis. Let's start looking into the data to see how we can help children and women.
So you talked about the 50 best-selling adult videos. I guess when we say adult videos, we're meaning porn, not The Notebook. And what do people talk about? What's the universe of solutions here? Banning them? Limiting where you can view them? How do you address this crisis as you see it?
Yeah, Anne, that's a great question. So, you know, this resolution specifically is not trying to ban this. What we're trying to do specifically today is to raise awareness and start the conversation and saying, you know, maybe this isn't great for our community, especially when it comes to children. And what can we specifically do about it in relation to sex trafficking, abuse of women and minors? We're really just trying to raise awareness with this resolution and start the conversation to say, enough is enough with the exploitation, and we need to help families and children in our state.
According to the Brady Organization, 310 people are shot every day in the U.S., and that includes 100 people shot and killed and 61 who die by taking their own lives with a gun. Because of that and the increase in mass shootings, some have called for gun violence to be declared a public health crisis and studied in very much the same way you're suggesting pornography be studied. How do you compare that with pornography? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, so, you know, first off, that's really difficult for the families and individuals that have suffered.
I mean, children get exposed to guns and accidentally shoot themselves all the time.
Right, right. So, yeah, you know, first off, you know, we can't flippantly just toss by that from the families that really have hardship from these things. But that's really not what we're talking about at all in this resolution.
No, I know it's not what you're talking about, but I'm still trying to get to the bottom of what constitutes a public health crisis. So I'm wondering, that's another society issue that's been brought up as a public health crisis. People are dying every day. 310 are shot every day in the U.S.
That's correct. That's correct. And as I said, that's, you know, obviously not something great. I am a firm supporter of our Second Amendment rights. But what we're talking about specifically in this resolution is that, you know, the United States has the number one demand for sex trafficking in the world. We have a huge abuse of women and minors in our community. So what we're looking at is saying, let's look at this specifically and say enough is enough. Are you specifically okay that Ohio is the fourth ranked state in the United States for sex trafficking?
But again, the question is, what the connection is directly and what we know about it. You're saying that's what we want to, you want to study is a potential connection between that and pornography, right?
I'm saying that, well, there's already studies that have shown that there is, with the increase in pornography in society, we have an increase in sex trafficking, abuse of women and minors. The data has already been there in other states that have declared pornography a public health crisis. So we can try to talk around, you know, around the bush and saying, well, is it or is it not? Mm-hmm. But specifically, we've seen in other states that they've declared a public health crisis. It is a crisis in our state. You can look to my community and you can see the havoc that sex trafficking and abuse of women and minors is having in our communities. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're specifically looking and saying enough is enough. We're done with this. We can debate the minutiae of, you know, tiny details, what's a health crisis, what's not. Well, I would specifically look and say a health crisis is when girls are being sex trafficked. A health crisis is when women are being abused. And a health crisis is when a 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old child is having pornography that's an addictive substance being put in front of their face. To me, I would look and say, that is a public health crisis. Okay. And I think people on both sides of the aisle would look to that and say, you're right. With everything that's happening in culture and society, something has to change. And we want to make it a public health crisis to be able to view that and see what we can do to change it.
So your support for the Second Amendment makes you hesitate in going the distance and calling gun violence a public health crisis. But your support for the First Amendment and free expression doesn't inhibit you in going after pornography in this way.
We're not outlawing pornography here. We're raising the awareness to the negative implications of pornography on families and women and children. Okay. And that's specifically what we're doing in this bill. And I think people, as I said, on both sides of the aisle would look to this when they look to the data, when they look to other states. And you know what? When we look at Ohio, I live not too far from the 70-75 interchange in our state. It is one of the worst places in the United States for sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. We have to do everything we can to protect our women and children from sexual abuse and assault. And that's what's happening because of the increase in pornography in society. So what we're specifically looking at in this resolution is we're not changing law. Mm-hmm. We're raising awareness.
Okay.
We're looking to see how we can protect children and women throughout our communities in our state. And, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just want to take one question from a caller who's going to ask a question that you know, I think you should answer. Let's see. Robert in Chillicothe, you're on the air. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Anne, good job on focusing on her. My question to this person is, who decides what is pornography and what isn't?
Yeah. I mean, the Supreme Court has notably mentioned, at least I can't remember which justice, that you know it when you see it. But Jenna Powell, State Representative Jenna Powell, what do you say to that?
I think, you know, that's a great question. I think you're completely right, Anne. People know pornography when they see it. It's not something that's vague. It's inappropriate, very inappropriate images that no child should ever see. It's not really that difficult to define or understand, and I think the Supreme Court did a good job of that.
Okay, well, Robert, thanks a lot for that call. But for the purposes of studying it, wouldn't it be kind of difficult to nail that one down?
No, it really, okay. Really would not.
Right.
Nope.
Okay.
Most people understand what pornography is. If you ask someone, there's not a question in people's minds.
Okay. Well, State Representative Jenna Powell, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Anne, thanks so much for having me.
State Representative Jenna Powell, she's a Republican. She represents Miami County and portions of Dark County. And she is the she has introduced a resolution that would declare pornography a public health crisis in the state of Ohio. She says she wants to do it to raise awareness about the deleterious effects of pornography on women and children. We're going to continue our questioning about what is a public health crisis anyways, and what does it mean when one is declared. Stay with us, and we welcome your calls and your questions and comments. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. A group of conservative state lawmakers want to declare pornography a public health crisis in Ohio. The proposed resolution won't have the force of law, per se, but it would put Ohio in line with more than a dozen other states that have enacted similar declarations. Opponents believe that there's insufficient evidence to link pornography to a quote-unquote public health crisis. Emily Rothman is a professor at the Boston University School of Public Health. She studies the issues of domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking, and we welcome her. Hi, Emily.
Hi there.
For the purposes of the conversation, what is the definition of a public health crisis?
You know, it's not like we in public health have one definition, but I would say that normally we think of a public health crisis as something that needs urgent attention, immediate action, usually because something new and acute has taken place, like a new cluster of Ebola cases or an epidemic of opioid overdose. So it's typically a problem that affects human health directly and acutely, and that we think can be changed via collective action. So in this case, I don't think it's entirely accurate or fair to call this a public health issue, and I think it might hurt other public health issues if we start using this phrase public health crisis so loosely.
How would it hurt other issues?
Well, when we use the term crisis carelessly, we run the risk of burning out the public on what a crisis really
like
is.
Like Peter and the Wolf.
Yeah, and when it's time to pull together and spring into action for the sake of one another's welfare, people might just shrug and say, oh, there they go again, you know, calling something else a public health crisis. So for that reason, when we focus on the word crisis, I think that's overdoing it. And then the other thing is that when we think about public health problems, normally people who care about public health issues like stopping violence against women or human trafficking, we go to evidence-based, randomized control trial-tested strategies that we know stop those problems. The good news is, in the case of human trafficking, in the case of violence against women, we do have randomized control trial tested prevention strategies that will work. And removing pornography is not one of those strategies that we know reduces those problems.
Right. In your work, that's what you study, is the cause of human trafficking and sexual violence. And have you ever found any link between that and pornography?
I mean,
or not you, but in the realm.
It's not that there are not people who are human traffickers who haven't used pornography in order to groom victims, or people haven't coerced people into pornography. So that happens. However, there is no evidence that the amount of pornography in a society or a community either increases or decreases the amount of human trafficking that's going on. However, there are more direct actions that we could take that do affect human trafficking, prosecution of human traffickers or prevention programs that work on the variables that we know either put people at risk for being trafficked or for perpetrating trafficking. Those make a lot more sense. I think the other important point is that for people who are truly interested in public health, what we are active on right now is trying to make sure that we get comprehensive sex education into schools. If you care about what kids think and learn about sex, then we are behind comprehensive sex education. We're about making sure girls get the HPV vaccine if they want that. We're making sure that people have choices when it comes to reproductive and sexual health. Those are the public health issues that you will find the public health community behind. I mean, the major public health entities like the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and World Health Organization, even state health departments, there isn't a one that's declared pornography a public health crisis.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the issue of public health crisis because a group of conservative state lawmakers want to pass a resolution declaring pornography a public health crisis in Ohio. About 15 other states have done so. There's kind of model legislation out there that they're following. My guest right now is Emily Rothman. She's a professor at Boston University School of Public Health, and she studies the issues of domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Brian in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Hi, Brian.
Hi there. I agree that this should be definitely addressed by the state government, although I feel like it should be come at from a different direction, and we should be focusing more on the addictive properties of pornography instead of the domestic abuse. I do agree with your current caller that the evidence for the domestic abuse is just not there. But at addiction, we should be treating this more in the same way we do gambling and drugs, things of that nature. And one of the points that I wanted to make was there is a small amount of scientific evidence, and the reason that it's still very small is there is a lack of a control group, people who have not, particularly boys, who have not been exposed to pornography. And so you need a control group to see what boys or men are like who have not been exposed to pornography and those who have. And because so many men have admitted to seeing pornography as young as they're, 10 and 11 years old, mm-hmm. it's difficult to divide people into different groups. One of the reasons that we could link cancer to cigarettes is that we had a control group of non-smokers. Mm. If there were no non-smokers, then scientists might have assumed that lung cancer was just a normal part of life. Mm. And so the fact that we have no control group makes scientific research in addiction difficult. And that's really where this should be coming at. And some states are treating it as an addiction and not focusing on the sex abuse or the trafficking side of it.
Well, let's hear Emily Rothman. What do you make of that?
I think on the issue of is pornography addictive, it's important to point out that there is debate in the field and that the scientific community sees it slightly differently. So, and it may sound like just splitting hairs or words, but I don't think that it is. So they say, okay, there are some people who may develop compulsive use of pornography. That is not the same thing neurologically as having an addiction, whether it's a reliance on some kind of substance or having the same rewards in the brain when we're addicted to something. And so that matters. That matters in terms of how we figure out what causes the problem and how we treat it. So even though there's this movement that has made the case that it's ironclad, we've definitely got the evidence in, this is addictive, the scientific community isn't saying that. And it's worth a check-in with the scientists.
Thank you for that call. Anyone else? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And also, when we're talking about pornography, it's a concept. The delivery system of pornography, does that matter? Whether it's, you know, a Playboy magazine or, you know, adult film?
So I don't know that I can speak to that because I haven't seen evidence that would comment on that one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
What I can say is, you know, people are concerned and have a right to be concerned about the impact of pornography on people, whether those people are adults and children.
Mm-hmm.
And so it isn't to say that pornography is great for children. There's nothing to worry about here, nothing to see here. That is not the message at all. It is worth investigating, and it is worth thinking about, you know, what shapes people and how they're behaving, both in terms of sex and in terms of violence. But the evidence isn't in a way yet that allows us to draw a conclusion that either, you know, pornography is a crisis or that the most effective way to solve the problems that we care about is by going after pornography. And there is a downside. I mean, it's a real slippery slope. So historically, in this country and elsewhere, what people call obscenity and what they try to put off limits as pornography marginalizes certain groups of people, and I'm talking about LGBTQ, PPIA plus mm-hmm. community. You know, I'm talking about the way that we see rights eroded is linked. It's almost like what gets called obscenity or pornography is the canary in the coal mine. We see rights start to disappear for groups when we start calling certain things obscenity and putting it off limits.
Because some people think that just the act of gay sex is pornographic, inappropriate.
Yeah, right? And they pathologize it. I mean,
yeah.
It really starts chipping away at just people's right to exist or to do what they want to do.
Let's see. Richard in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Richard.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to say that I think that in Ohio especially that pornography is not very well regulated, much like very much unlike alcohol or tobacco is. And I think that for small children in particular, that it probably does have a warping effect.
What kind of regulation are you thinking about, though, Richard? I'm wondering, what do you mean by that? Because we buy beer and cigarettes at stores that are licensed to sell it. Pornography?
Well, I think that
is everywhere.
Much like the previous caller was talking about, it is very easy for small children, such as 11 or 12 year olds, to just get access. Pornography online,
right.
Free on the internet.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, Richard, thanks a lot for that call. If anybody has any thoughts about regulating pornography online and how we would achieve that anyways, whether or not it would violate the First Amendment, I don't know. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Emily Rothman, what about equating it with things like beer and wine? Do you think, again, it's going to that issue and it's suggesting an addiction issue versus...
I think we need to get really clear on what the outcome is that we're trying to prevent. So speaking in super public health terms, I think of pornography as the exposure, right? It's a cigarette. Now, we wouldn't worry about cigarettes if we didn't know that they caused an outcome that we don't like. Let's call it lung cancer. In the case of pornography, what is the outcome that we're worried about? And if that outcome is violence, let's say, or compulsive use, then the right thing to do is to look at how should we treat the exposure? How should we regulate the exposure to get the best effect on the outcome that we care about?
The American Public Health Association and the American Medical Association have declared gun violence a public health crisis. What do you make of that?
It makes sense because we know that that people are dying. We can see that. There's direct evidence. We don't see that people are dying necessarily because of pornography. A new acute uptick in the number of cases, and that by acting collectively, we would be able to solve this problem, which harms, thousands of people and their families and communities every year.
So gun violence, a public health crisis, rather than, say, drowning? I mean, are there other things comparable to that or, outside of, getting away from the pornography issue for a second?
I may not be sure what you mean, because drowning is also a public health problem. It's a serious injury problem for kids in particular. But so tell me more what you mean by that.
I guess the difference in my mind is that probably drowning is pretty well studied. We know what leads to drowning, people who aren't able to swim or they go into dangerous situations where they shouldn't be.
Yeah. Right. And so I guess, you know, with pornography, the evidence isn't there in that same way. We don't know that there's a direct and acute harm on people just because pornography exists in society and or because they personally are exposed to it. So that needs more investigation before we draw our conclusions about that. And the trick here is that people are really using the idea that pornography is a public health problem as a strategy. If they were truly interested in public health, then they would be looking at the range of options that we have for addressing the problems that they say that they're interested in. That's not happening here.
That's Emily Rothman. She's a professor at Boston University School of Public Health. She studies issues of domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking. We're talking about all of this because a group of conservative state lawmakers in Ohio want to declare pornography a public health crisis in the state. It would be a resolution. It wouldn't have the force of law per se. It wouldn't ban pornography, but it would put Ohioans on high alert. It would raise awareness. At least that's according to the sponsor of the resolution, State Representative Jenna Powell. We spoke to her earlier in the show. Make sure you check out the archives. You check and listen later if you missed that part of the show. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. A group of Ohio lawmakers are looking to declare pornography a public health crisis. Ohio, we're talking about what makes or doesn't make a public health crisis in our society and how pornography plays into it one way or another. Still with us, Emily Rothman, professor at the Boston University School of Public Health. And in 2016, she co-authored a curriculum for teenagers on pornography literacy. Also joining us by Skype is Jackie St. James. She's an adult film writer and director. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Just as far as from where you sit, what do you make of a resolution to declare pornography a public health crisis?
I understand why people believe that it is a health crisis because of the accessibility, especially with people in the younger demographic that are accessing it. But at the same time, I think the real crisis is lack of sexual education, both in the school system and by parents.
Emily Rothman?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. The other thing that I heard the legislator say earlier is that one of the main arguments for calling this a public health issue is that now we could collect data on it. But you don't need to declare something a public health issue in order to collect data. So there's a lot of things from manufacturing to agriculture that we collect data on, and we didn't have to declare those public health issues to do it. So, in other words, as concerned as people are about pornography and the questions that they have about it, there are ways of getting to those and addressing those and thinking about them without declaring it a public health crisis.
An earlier guest, State Representative Jenna Powell, who sponsored the resolution that we've been talking about that's inspired this conversation, said that it mentioned several times that the issue of children and children being exposed to pornography. Jackie St. James, you told NPR recently that you worry about how porn could affect young people.
I do. And I think it mainly comes down to, again, the lack of conversation. It's a very tricky subject. A lot of people are afraid to delve into a conversation with a minor about pornography. It's an uncomfortable thing. Sex education seems to be very uncomfortable in general. So there is a concern, because I think it is important that porn is accessible. That's a fact. And it's very hard to prevent younger people from accessing it, which is why I think it's important that people educate kids about the fact that it's still a form of entertainment. It's not education. And I think that's a message that needs to be very clearly defined, especially for younger people who, I guess, are getting a lot of their sex education from porn, and they shouldn't be.
Yeah, Emily Rothman, tell us about that curriculum that you created for young people about porn.
Yeah, well, exactly in response to these kinds of concerns, I got together with some colleagues at the Boston Public Health Commission, and we created what's a 9-session curriculum for teenagers that invites them to think critically about sexually explicit media. And it's unique in that it doesn't push an anti-pornography position or a pro-pornography position. It offers up the best available evidence that we have to adolescents, the same way that I do with my graduate students, and it asks them to think critically about it and to ask questions and to think about all kinds of things, like what is consent in sex, or you know, how do you have a healthy dating relationship? How do you make sure that you have good boundaries with somebody else and that your boundaries are being respected? Those are the kinds of things that we think kids really need to talk about and think about. And it turns out that they are interested in the topic of pornography. When we mention that, they show up at class a lot quicker than when we said, hey, come to a dating violence class. That
right.
didn't sound as much like as much fun for them. But we sort of use that in order to talk to them about what we think really are the important things that they should know so that they don't learn those in the wrong way from pornography.
Hmm. What do you think about that, Jackie St. James?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fantastic thing to be providing a course that is talking openly about pornography. And I think it is important that people realize that, you know, porn isn't always this negative perception of sex. There's a lot of people, including myself, that are really trying to change what's out there. It's just that when most people are accessing porn through tube sites, and those are basically thumbnails that are trying to get clicks, and it's more clickbait than it really is what's out there. Because there's a lot of really great pornography that's out there, and it's not this violence towards women, this general assumption of what pornography is. So I think it's also about educating people that there's other kinds of porn than what you're just seeing on a tube site.
Well, you know, an earlier caller that we didn't get on, she left, but she did mention that issue about the access to porn on online access to porn and how that's how so many kids are seeing it. Jackie St. James, what about restrictions? That seems like such a slippery slope.
Ugh, I mean, it is.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's that's again what it comes down to, education. And really, I think for parents especially, it's telling your kids, you know, this isn't real sex. Although I was speaking at UC Santa Barbara earlier this year, and there was a gay student who actually said porn helped him because it helped him realize what it was that he you know, liked and what he was into. So I think you kind of have to, you know, educate your kid that if they are going to be watching porn, that, you know, what they're seeing necessarily on there isn't what's fully accessible. When you're paying for your porn, it's a lot easier to find the things that are more, you know, more connected, more, you know, less, again, I mean, I'm bumbling here, but it's a lot of what you're seeing on the tube sites is these extreme scenes that are going to get a click versus the scenes that are showing more, I guess, air quotes, realistic versions of sex.
And Emily Rothman, what Jackie St. James just referred to about the kid who said he's understood better his own, you know, about himself better because of porn. Is that what you were kind of talking about, where this could really isolate and different groups of people and marginalize them more. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's that. And, you know, just putting things off limits and saying, like, these certain things, and historically people have called it perverse, or, you know, obscene, means that you're, you know, it, for some people, invalidating who they are and how they want to live.
Let's see. Stephen in Newark, you're on the air. Hi, Stephen. Hello, Stephen.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
One of the things that I thought was not lacking but insufficient is the idea that there isn't really a definition of pornography. And the representative that was sponsoring this was, I just thought, very cavalier about dismissing that.
I guess you're saying not all porn is created equal.
Exactly.
Okay.
Every one has a different definition, it seems. And I personally don't feel that every film or book or whatever that depicts a sex act between people equals pornography.
Yeah, Jackie St. James?
Well, I mean, I think anytime you're seeing any explicit sex act, it's often deemed as pornography. But I think just in saying that, there's this negative connotation into what pornography is. And it sounds like, you know, a lot of people, when they hear that, it's a negative thing, you know. So what are we supposed to call explicit sex acts? You know, art or, I mean, it's sort of one of those, it's a big question for the amount of time that we have in a big statement. But, you know, I think that based on what he just said, it seems like when people say porn, they're thinking it's a negative, bad, awful, terrible thing. Mm. And so if we're going to say, well, not all things is pornography, so then, yeah, where is that line drawn? Is it drawn when there's violence, or is it just a sex act? That's a difficult question to answer, to be completely frank. I know right now it's just anything with nudity or anything with graphic sex, and that's even including something like 50 Shades of Grey or a book. I mean, it's often considered pornographic material.
Emily Rothman?
Yeah, well, we do. I mean, I'm no constitutional law scholar, but I will say, yeah, we have something called the three-part Miller test that the Supreme Court has used in order to decide what counts as pornography or obscenity and what doesn't. And it's precisely because of these kinds of questions. Historically, there have been books that we now consider important cultural works of art that were considered obscene, and the court really had to wrestle with, obscene according to who?
Mm-hmm.
And there is still some subjectivity in that, because they say, well, it has to be according to community standards, local community standards. So, you know, what counts as obscene in one place may not offend people in another place. Officially, we do still all wrestle with what is the definition of pornography and obscenity in this country. And that's an important point, because there are medical textbooks or helpful information types of things that could get put off limits if we are not careful about how we define it.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, what's also interesting is that it's if you're looking at television, like Game of Thrones, where incest and, you know, this is all acceptable and it's okay. But in pornography, when you're doing the fake incest or whatever, you know, we have to follow we're self-regulated, but we follow very strict rules so that we aren't brought up on obscenity charges. So there's definitely a double standard between what you can do in pornography and what you can do in mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like obscenity laws are a lot more lenient towards mainstream media versus pornography.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting distinction. There's other examples besides Game of Thrones, too. Sense8 got a lot of flack for that. There's other examples. It's an interesting question. Let's see. Susan in Grove City, you're on the air. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I've got a question for Dr. Rothman. You know, it seems like we've heard that Ohio ranks like 45th, 47th, even last in the country in so many different public health topics that are really important. And I think that includes public health funding. And so it strikes me the legislature is picking these socially conservative issues to sort of just get away from that. And I'm wondering if Dr. Rothman could comment on if we were to actually fund public health being taught in the schools, how through sex education it might be helpful to address this issue along with domestic violence and sexual diseases, so that actually something good happened instead of trying to buck the First Amendment like this representative is clearly trying to do.
Emily Rothman?
Yeah, I think your caller has a really great point. And as I understand it, these resolutions themselves don't carry any money with them or directive like that, but they do pave the way, right, for future legislation to do that very thing. So it's kind of like a foot-in-the-door approach. And we urgently need funding directed towards schools, towards youth's comprehensive sex education. There are only 24 states and D.C. that mandate sex education in public schools right now. And to me, the real crime is that only 13 states require that what is taught in schools be medically accurate. Just to say that again, only 13 states require that when we teach sex ed, it'd be medically accurate information. So we really have a long way to go in terms of what we're teaching our kids. And it is fine and well to worry about pornography. That is a concern. But, you know, it's like a drop in the bucket compared to the fact that we are not giving them information in schools by and large. And when we do, we're not taking care to make sure that it's medically accurate. Those are things that really need to be addressed. And to answer the question, yes, absolutely. There are ways to talk about pornography and the fact that it is entertainment with kids so that they, just like we have to teach them to ignore violent video games and not hurt other people, we can talk to them about other, you know, sexual media that they see in the same way. Don't do that.
Susan in Grove City, thank you very much for that call. Thanks for listening. Jackie St. James, how did you get into the business and what were your thoughts about it before you did? And now that you're inside of it, you know, what do you think?
I mean, I had been watching porn since I was 18. I'm in my 40s now, so I grew up during the time where you actually had to go into the video store and go behind the curtain and get the porn. And I was a huge consumer of pornography, and I got into the business when one of my male friends sent me a link to a porn movie that was actually a romance porn movie. The men were very attractive. There was a script, there was a story, there was tension. And I had never seen anything like that. And I was so drawn to that studio. And I found out they were doing a writing contest. I entered for romance writers. I wrote a script, won the contest, and ended up that movie got produced. And then I just fell in love with the industry. I was very shocked because I thought the director, Eddie Powell, that did the first movie I wrote called Dear Abby, invited me to set. And I was terrified because I had these preconceived notions, which I think most people outside of porn have, which is that we're all drug addicts and, you know, damaged, awful, horrible people doing these vile, terrible things. But when I got to set, I was so blown away by how professional it was that, you know, everyone's there to do a job and to go home to their families or their loved ones or their pets. And it really demystified this idea that it was this dirty, awful boogie nights type of experience. You know, it's a business and it's a $1 billion business and we're all there to do a job and get a job done. It's not the way it's depicted, I guess, in Hollywood movies. It's a lot less sexy.
Emily Rothman? Did you want to say something? We are just about out of time, but
yeah, no, I think Jackie said it well.
Okay. Well, Jackie St. James, adult film writer and director, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
And also Emily Rothman, professor at the Boston University School of Public Health. She helped create a curriculum for young people about pornography and how they can consume it or use it to understand things about sexuality. Thank you so much, Dr. Rothman.
Thank you very much.
That's it. Thanks for everybody. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your calls. And have a great day. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.